Good evening and welcome to the Métis Voices Radio Show, our own internet radio program at BBS Radio every Friday evening, 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Station 2, featuring a variety of subjects and special guests each week from all over, live from the Métis Métis Museum in beautiful Vavenby, B.C., Canada, with your host, Dale Haggerty. Call-in lines are now open as well as a chat feature for your questions and comments. Here are the numbers to call. In the U.S. and Canada, toll-free 888-228-4494. And worldwide, toll-free 877-489-6350. For direct lines, go to www.bbsradio.com, BBS Station 2 on the right-hand side. And don't worry if you miss any of these call-in numbers. They are posted on the BBS Radio website. Those who wish to enter the BBS live chat rooms, please go to the homepage of BBS Radio on the column on the left. Scroll down and click into How to Listen. Then scroll down to Chat Live, BBS, My Chat Rooms, click in, choose the drop-down menu, select the chat room chatter hall, sign in if already registered, or register if not. And now, your host, Dale Haggerty.
And say, everyone, welcome this Friday, July 11th. Tonight, I have the privilege to have as my guest a good friend and Métis sister, Nadine Gagnier. Hello, Nadine.
Hi, Dale. How are you?
Good. Glad to have you on the show tonight. First of all, yeah, there you go. First of all, I'd like to introduce the people about and talk about yourself and where you were born and were you raised in the Métis community.
Okay. Basically, I was born in Vancouver, British Columbia. But I consider myself a Métis person. My mother is Cree Métis from just outside Edson, Alberta, Marlborough. It's a small Métis community, and my father's French Canadian. And so I grew up with hearing him speak French, and it was spoken in the home. But I was basically raised for most part of my life around the Lower Mainland. I grew up for the most part grade 3 till I graduated, and until now, in the Lower Mainland, just outside North Delta, and I graduated from North Delta, and it's where I work now, just beside North Delta, Surrey. So I've been around the Lower Mainland for most of my life.
Oh, that's good, 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 good.
My ancestry is Cree and Iroquois and French and English.
There you go. You were raised basically in the Lower Mainland, but you've been. Basically brought up in the Métis community, and you basically really never really, even though that there wasn't a base, land base there, you're basically still involved with a lot of Métis people like Teresa Dion and of course
yes,
your mom.
Yeah, but it wasn't until I was a lot older that I really got involved. For the most part, most of my life was in an urban setting around non-Aboriginal people. When I went to school, I remember being one of the only Aboriginal people in my school. So for the most part, until after I graduated, I was pretty absorbed into the urban culture. I wasn't really connected with my Métis or Aboriginal community until after I graduated. And then from there, became really involved in the Métis community and Aboriginal community in Surrey through Métis Family Services, the museum, Klahowee Aboriginal Center, and that's where I've continued to work for the last 12 years. So it was sort of, yeah, I didn't really get into it until when I was a lot older.
That's okay. This is what our youth have been doing, though. They're really trying to feel out what they've, what they're going through with trying to find out their identity and stuff like that, because it wasn't a very popular thing about, you know, even when I was growing up, about being Métis or even known that you're Métis or mm-hmm. So I'm like you. I was brought up in a city in an urban environment, and then all of a sudden I found my place in the community, and that's where I am today. So so listen, what is the AIDP and your involvement in it? And you can say it, whatever it is.
Okay.
I just got this off your bio there, so.
Bio, that I work as an AIDP consultant and supervisor. So basically, AIDP stands for Aboriginal Infant Development Programs. And what it is an early intervention program. I have all my background education in early childhood education. When I was really trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I spent the last 12 years working in my community, doing a lot of family support, frontline work for a number of years before I really figured out that I wanted to really help my community and try to figure out what was the best way that I could do that. So in speaking with my mom and having the support of my community, I realized that choosing early childhood education was an area for me that I felt I could make the biggest impact if I could reach out to the children at the youngest age possible when all the learning takes place, that I felt I could have the greatest impact. So I did go to school to get all my early childhood education. I have my special needs, infant toddler. I'm at UBC right now taking more courses pertaining to infant development. But it's a program, it's an early intervention program, a home visiting program where you support families with children 0 to 3 that have special needs or developmental delays. So for the most part, for the last 12 years, I've been working specifically in the Aboriginal community in Surrey with Aboriginal families, a lot, mostly with foster children. A lot of my work is still done today with Aboriginal foster children, and really tailored now within the last 5 years, I've been doing specifically Aboriginal infant development, focusing on infant development. And so that's what that stands for. So I'm the supervisor at our program at Kwahali, and I have 3 other consultants that work in my program as well. I'm the AIDP regional advisor for the Fraser region. So my other job is supporting all the new Aboriginal infant development programs that are developing within this area. And the Fraser region, if you know anything about regions, the Fraser region is quite large. It stretches from Tawasin, the Burnaby Tri-Cities, Surrey, all the way up past Chilliwack, Stolo First Nations, up to Seabird First Nations is the area. So I have sort of 3 jobs that I kind of balance at work, but that's what that program is. And it's basically British Columbia is the only actual province in all of Canada that has such an early intervention program, such as infant development programs, where it's home-based visiting and you're supporting families with special needs children.
Now, Nadine, is it helping? I mean, you're out there doing this good work that you think, is it really helping the children that we need?
I think there's still a lot of work we need to do. There's so much work we need to do, and the elders talk about, we just did a presentation, me and my coworker today at UBC, in regards to some of the issues related to Aboriginal mental health, and one of the biggest issues being the residential schools. So we're still suffering multi-generational trauma from the residential schools, huge issues that we're dealing with in the community, and there are huge issues that we're facing on a daily basis. I can go into it in more detail over the hour, but sometimes you get frustrated at work because we're dealing with such immense issues, but I think it's just going to take a lot of time, energy, resources. We need more people, especially Aboriginal people, going back to school to get their education in something like early childhood education, because we have the highest growing population at this time in Canada. So we have this huge population growth of all these infants coming into the world, and, you know, there's other issues we're dealing with because of residential schools. So we have this huge population growth. A lot of these children require extra support, but we don't have enough people in the community trained as far as early childhood education or other early intervention, such as speech and language or therapies. So it's going to take time, and the elders do speak about 7 generations it's going to take to heal from the effects of the residential schools. So sometimes I get frustrated because you feel like, is it really making a difference? But I think we all need to just keep moving forward in the work that we do and continue to know, like, I feel strongly that we need to be reaching out to our children at the youngest possible age, and to make the biggest impression before, you know, they become teenagers, before into adulthood, where it's a lot harder to change patterns of learning and patterns of living. And I do feel that we can play the biggest role if we can reach out to our children. And I feel I have a huge privilege in being able to work with families right when their child's born, even being involved with them prenatally when, you know, parents find out that they're going to be having a child, to support them. I think that's where we need to be investing our time and our energy, because it's going to have the greatest impact. So I continue to do the work because I feel passionate about it, and I'm very passionate about working with Aboriginal foster children. Within the Fraser region, we have the highest number of Aboriginal children in care in the whole province, as close to 60% almost. It's getting up to 60% of all children in care in BC are Aboriginal, even though they make up 7% of the population. So a lot of my work is with foster children, will continue to be with foster children, and it's where my heart is. And the work that I do with the children, I see the small things that make a difference. You know, if I can reach out to a child and, you know, help teach them about their culture, connect them to their community, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what matters. That's what makes a difference, I think, and it continues to push me in the work that I do.
Wow. Yeah, you really sound dedicated, and I really have to hand it to you, Nadine. I know you personally for the last 12 years, that I know the kind of work that you've done, and I know you off the playing field, and I know that you're dedicated to do this, because and I personally think myself, it's people in your age bracket that needs to do this kind of work to help the kids out there, and to see that it's young people that are taking the role models on and doing this kind of work. And I really applaud you for that. So that's really good.
Thank you. Yeah.
November 05, you received the BC Aboriginal Child Care Award for your contribution of the Aboriginal children in BC. As well, you were chosen one of 12 National Aboriginal Role Models for Canada for 2005 and 2006. Though the National Aboriginal Role Model Program in Ottawa, can you share a little bit more about this with us?
Oh, sure. The National Aboriginal Role Model Program is a program that was developed quite some time ago. It used to be, I can't remember what the name prior, it was the National Native Role Model Program. I think that was the name of it before it was adapted in the last 5 or 6 years to be the National Aboriginal Role Model Program, and it's run through NAHO, which is the National Aboriginal Health Organization in Ottawa. And basically, every year the program chooses 12 Aboriginal role models from across Canada to be the role models for the year. So you have four First Nations role models, four Inuit role models, and four Métis role models, and they are chosen across the country. They get a nomination. There's a huge nomination process, and they get looked at by a committee of previous role models, and then they get chosen, and they are role models for the year, and they get posters and trading cards that are circulated across Canada to different communities as well for that year that they are in the position. Communities can request role model visits, so role models travel all across Canada to different communities to speak to the youth, to try to motivate them to reach their fullest potential. And so you get to visit different communities. There's a whole swearing-in ceremony in Ottawa. And it was a real honor and a real privilege to be chosen for that in 2005, 2006. And just felt really honored to be a representative for Métis youth. And I was able to travel to quite a few different communities, some being remote, isolated communities, and to meet with communities, talk to the youth. And it was just a really great experience for me. So,
yeah,
it's
based on the youth, right? And what was the age of the youth based on?
Oh, sorry. It's the youth age range for the National Role Model Program is age 13 to 30.
13
to 30, and the 2008 role models were just sworn in, actually June 21st, and I was lucky enough to be down there for that event. So the new role models have been chosen for the 2008 year.
Wow.
Yes, so, and one of them that just happens to be is one of my good friends that I helped nominate. Her name's Inez Jasper, and she's a really great person. She's a nurse that works out at Stolo First Nations here, just out in Chilliwack, and she's went to school to become a nurse, and then she's gone back to her community to support her community and works on reserves. So I'm always continue to be involved, even though I'm no longer a role model. I'm still involved with the program and get to do this from time.
Yeah, that must be
a really great program. It's a really great program because I just feel like there's not enough times that there's enough role models out there for our young people. It's always in the media. You'll see the negative stories of First Nations and Aboriginal people. You never hear the successes. You never hear all the wonderful things that a lot of our young people and our youth and other people are doing in our communities. So it's a really great program.
Yeah, that's really good. This is why you're on here today is, and one of the reasons why we brought you on the radio program is, you know, I had a caller in, and it was after the show, and she was talking about, because I'm dealing with a lot of the residential issues right now with our family, and of course, you know, one of these this good friend of ours, she had mentioned that, you know, that it's time that we have our young people come up and start to talk about the successes instead of always dwindling on the past. That, and this is what I am trying to promote our Métis culture, that there is, we are a successful people, we are a very proud people, and our youth, if they are brought into the right realm, they can be just as proud as the rest of us as proud Métis and be successful. I think myself personally, I'm a very successful person, even though that maybe I'm not the richest person in the world, but I think I'm very successful in what I'm doing and just accomplishing every day's work just to survive this tough world we live in. So, and I really appreciate you coming on and talking about the successes of the youth, Nadine.
There is so much going on in the community, especially with the young people. Like, a lot of my friends are musicians and artists, and there's just so much talent in the community as far as artists go. The variety of music that's being created, you know, I'm thinking that it's so great to see First Nations and Métis people are of all different Aboriginal backgrounds coming together and just being able to create such wonderful things in all genres, whether it be country or hip-hop or whatever. We have the ability to take our teachings from our history, from our culture, and adapt them to the ways that, you know, as technology and we move forward, we're able to adapt with the times. And there's so much talent in the community. I just, you know, when I look at it sometimes, I'm just overwhelmed by it. And we really need to be taking the time to honor that, to celebrate our successes, because there definitely is lots of successes.
I agree, Eric. I really agree. You created your own little group, the Children of the Rainbow Drum Group, and you had released your first Aboriginal children's CD in November 2007, titled My Moccasins. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about?
Okay. Well, this probably Children of the Rainbow Drum Group has been going now for 3.5 years, I think. We started back November 2004. And again, I work in early childhood education. All my focus is 0 to 6 with the young little ones. So I spent a lot of time working with them, singing, drumming with them, and really realizing after some time that there wasn't a lot of resources, cultural resources, especially contemporary Aboriginal children's music geared towards young children and for the field, resources for the field of early childhood education. So I sort of, this happened, I guess, probably 4 or 5 years ago now, I started just writing brainstorming around some Aboriginal children's songs, and it was always something I had at the back of my head that I wanted to do, as well a drum group. And so we started back in 2004, and I sort of just did this call out that I wanted to create this drum group, and I had a vision because Children of the Rainbow Drum Group, we represent all nations, all colors, peace, harmony, and friendship, and we have all different nations, Aboriginal nations that are in the drum group as well. We open it up to non-Aboriginal, so different cultures as well. So it's a vision of all nations, all colors, peace, harmony, and friendship. And I got this vision from a lot of our prophecies from our elders about Turtle Island, and that there would be a time where all cultures would be coming to Turtle Island and intermixing, and all the different races would be intermixing, so that one day that all, because of the intermixing of the different races, everyone would be one color and there wouldn't be any colors to divide us, any races, and that we'd be all intermixed and living in peace, harmony. So there are different prophecies and different teachings from the elders that prophesize this. So having these teachings, that's sort of where the idea grew out of, and started this drum group. And originally there was about 50 children in it, and I started with the children as early as 1 year old come into the drum group. So right now I have a good solid 25 children in the drum group from 1 year old to 14 years old, and we perform all over the Lower Mainland, a lot of different traditional songs from different territories, and then some of the songs that I wrote for my children's album. And we've been going for about 3.5 years, and we've been busy, the kids have been busy. We just came back from Ottawa, where we performed for the Governor General for the National Role Model Program and National Aboriginal Day. And the children's album was something that I've been working on for the last 3 years, and it was really great feeling. It was a great feeling to finally finish that, and it was actually completed and in my hand, ready for pickup on Métis Day, which was November 16th, and I just found it ironic that it happened to be that date that my CD was actually in my hand. So I honored it. The elders and the children was who I honored with my CD and dedicated it to them. And so we're still going strong. And these kids, all the parents, we do it all out of our own volunteer time. There's no funds that we get from anywhere that, you know, helps us get our outfits or our drums and, you know, gets us around. We all are just volunteering and working together, fundraising our own money, and now getting money from performances. And we just kind of, it's like one big family, and we really take care of each other. And the older kids teach the younger children. And it's something I started just thinking it was going to be something that I wanted to do, but it really grew into something bigger than I thought or I had ever imagined. And the kids still are thinking when they grow older, they're not going to want to be in it, but they keep getting older and they continue to want to be in it. So I'm just allow them to. The oldest one's 14 now and still wants to be in it, and I just put her in a helping role, and we continue to perform quite a few places, mostly a lot of cultural celebrations, a lot of early childhood conferences all over the Lower Mainland. And so we're still going strong. So I'll continue to do it for however long the kids want to keep going.
Yeah. So if anybody wanted to make a donation to keep this your drum group going, or just wanted to be a sponsor or something like that, how would they be able to get a hold of you? I'm sort of giving you a little bit of a commercial here.
Oh, well, thanks, Dale. I'm not necessarily looking for any kind of donations or anything. The biggest thing that, like, I'd like to put out there was just if anybody was interested in purchasing a CD, a portion of every CD sale goes back to Children of the Rainbow Drum Group. So I just would really encourage people to buy our CD, because two of the children in the drum group wrote one of the songs on the album, and I did bring the children into the studio to record on a few of the songs, so the kids are playing on the album. And I'm just marketing the CD independently at this point, and you could reach me through email, and it's just all lowercase, Nadine_Gagne@hotmail.com, and that's Nadine_Gagne@hotmail.com. And then if you wanted to email me, I could send you an order form, and that would be the biggest way that you could support our group. We'll probably just be buying a CD, and even if you don't have children, to give it away to somebody that does have children, and just to share the music and the culture and share what these kids are doing, because they work really hard, and they love what they do, and I just want to give the families and the kids credit, because I couldn't have a drum group without these kids that come and their parents that come every week that are dedicated and working so hard to learn the culture and just be proud of who they are and where they came from.
That's good. Well, what we could do here, Nadine, is since we've got a website up for the museum, what we could do is we'll get a hold of you and we'll have it. We'll have you post. You can send us actually a copy of the of a picture of it, and we'll have it posted up here. So if they want to get a hold of you, they can actually get a hold of you through by going on our website, sort of thing, and that'll really try to help you. Do it, and that way, like you say, it's you're doing it on your own, and you're feeling good, and makes the kids feel really good too, I bet.
Mhm. They do. They're really proud, and they think they're little rock stars, because I always tell them that they are. But they've been on TV, and our CD release that we had on April 20th at the Wise Hall in Vancouver, we had almost 200 people come out to support us, and we had national coverage on APTN, and I rented them a whole bunch of limos and got them sunglasses, and really, I try to do that for the kids often. We save up our money and then do something really special, like I'll rent them limousines, or we'll go out to Playland with everyone for the day and really celebrate it, because I really want to teach these children that if they want something, that they can achieve whatever they want, but that comes with hard work. It's not just you just get things without working hard for it. If you want something, you need to really work hard for it, and these kids do, and I want to show them that they can accomplish whatever they want with hard work, and that if they work really hard, that they will definitely get the benefits, and to really honor them with some, and try to do something really special for them, because they definitely do work very hard.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm glad to hear that your group is, because your mother often emails us and says, listen, tune to the APTN channel up here, and unfortunately, we only get the three channels. We are really in the business, so we don't get the APTN, but what I do is I try to go on the the website and try to download it on through the computers, through the archives. So, yeah.
Yeah, I joke about it because they're children of the rainbow, but I said we're going to be going forever. That we'll be like elders of the rainbow one day, still going. And, I feel honored because they really have gotten a lot of attention. They've performed for, like, the premier, the governor general, so many different people, the mayor of Surrey, different mayors and different dignitaries, all the chiefs of BC, they've performed. Like, half the time they're so young, they don't even know who they're performing for. But I'm trying to tell them, this is a very important person. And so when they get older and they look back to some of the things that they've done or the places they've gone, I think that they'll have a better understanding of where they have been and what they've been doing, because they've been quite a few places and performed for quite a few dignitary people at important events. So it's really awesome to see them do this, and they have no idea what they're like that they are in these important places doing these amazing things.
That's really good. Now, is there anybody? I know I've been watching your career going, but is there anybody? Is there more youth out there now that are starting to see what you've accomplished and having to follow your footsteps?
If I've personally influenced somebody, or do I see a positive change in our youth?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Do you see that positive change in our youth about?
I do, but again, I mean, sometimes we feel the progress is a bit slow, but I mean, I think the change is happening. Definitely, I know in just the small circle of friends that I have, that they're just the immense talent that there is. It's not to say that we definitely don't have our struggles, because we're dealing with huge issues in our community: youth suicide, youth pregnancy, drug and alcohol issues. I mean, there's still a huge range of issues that we're dealing with, but for the most part, I try to remain positive and feel and know that the youth are doing great things out there. And just being a part of the National Role Model Program, and each year seeing the up-and-coming youth that are taking the new positions of the new role models, it's amazing. This last run of role models that went through in Ottawa that was out there, they all have posters. And I was just looking through the list of immense we're talking about doctors and nurses and social workers and people doing amazing things. Like, I'm looking at their posters thinking, I can't believe I was on a poster here a couple of years ago, because these people are phenomenal, doing phenomenal things, getting their education and excelling and learning their traditional languages. A lot of the role models are learning, going back to relearn their traditional languages and speaking their traditional languages and really doing amazing stuff. So it's inspiring to see these young people that are 13, 17 years old, 22 with their head on their shoulder and really doing great things. So I try to focus on the positive and really think that we are making strides to move forward.
Do you speak Machif, or do you speak a little bit of French?
Like I said, my father speaks it fluently, so I heard it growing up, and I took French all the way through school, so I understand it, and I can speak a little bit of it, but again, once you leave school, or if you're not using it a lot, then you do lose the language, and my father, unfortunately, never spoke it to me directly. He spoke it around me to his friends, but never to me, so, I mean, it's there, it's in me, I can understand a lot of it, but I'm not fluent in it by all means, and with I don't speak Machif, but I am making a point of trying to learn Cree. So I've got a lot of Cree books, and my children's songs that I write incorporate the Cree language. But again, I'm just learning like everybody else, one step at a time, one word at a time. But I think that we all really need to be doing the best that we can or our own part to try to keep our languages alive, because they are becoming extinct and very quickly. And at the end of it, there's only going to be about 3 Aboriginal languages that are actually going to survive after everything's said and done. So I think it's up to each of us to, you know, our responsibility to try to relearn some of the language and stuff. So I am trying, but again, not fluent. And then I don't have a lot of people around me to speak it to as well. So it's hard. But again, traveling with the Role Model Program, I met with the Governor General in Toronto for International Women's Day, and there was all these women, Aboriginal women from across Canada that met with her, and there was quite a few women that could speak their traditional languages, so I think the language is still alive in a lot of different places, so I just really, I'm trying to do the best that I can do with the resources that I have, but no, nothing fluently at this point.
Yeah, I just want to ask one question, and I think this is a very important question, and I just want your own personal input about this. Like I says, your youth is dealing with the residential school situation. Do you think that there should be more programs available for the youth to approach the survivors and implement these programs rather than just getting counselors? I personally would love to see the program a program started where it's based on the youth, that is, because I believe that our youth need to understand what our survivors have gone through. And for them to heal through the suicides and the alcoholism and the pregnancies and all this, I think that this is a program that should be targeted. I'm very vocal about that, about getting our youth to do more for the communities, for our survivors, rather than getting professional counselors in there. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think I had a lot. I thought about this a lot today, actually, just in this presentation I had to do at UBC to a lot of non-Aboriginal people down at UBC. But I think, personally, the best way that we're going to heal, and we talk about the multi-generational trauma that's happened and that it still happens and is affecting our community generation to generation. And what multi-generational trauma is when trauma that happens is not resolved, and so that it just continues to get passed down from generation to generation. This is happening in our community because there hasn't been really any kind of system put in place to address these issues resulting directly from the residential schools. Just last month, we finally got an apology from the Canadian government, apology for the residential schools and what happened in them. That was just the very first apology after 100 years of waiting for an apology. It was just actually just an acknowledgement that something wrong had happened. So these are just the first steps, and it was really moving to sit there and watch this apology, and I was watching it at my work with all the elders and stuff, and it was a real paramount point in our history because it was that acknowledgement. But I'm strong feeling that this apology really doesn't mean anything if it's just an apology and there's nothing else behind it to back it. It's just words, and they need to stand behind that and really step forward and say, well, what are we going to do to take responsibility to resolve these issues? And I don't really think it's going to be with the counseling because, again, that's a Western European way of dealing with trauma and stuff, and it'd probably be with non-Aboriginal counselors, majority of it, and it probably trigger a lot of our families who have been through the residential school and just being counseled by a non-Aboriginal person because of the fear and mistrust that we deal with in our communities because of the residential schools. I think the biggest way that we're going to heal as a community and as a nation is through our ceremonies and through our spirituality and through relearning our culture. It's what has helped me to become a stronger person as an Aboriginal person is through the ceremonies that I do every year, and we do Dale, you're there with the Star Lodge ceremony, which is a powerful ceremony that brought me lots of healing, a lot of clarity, a lot of knowledge, and a better understanding of who I am as an Aboriginal person. So I think we really need to heal in a way that we've always traditionally healed and not following a system that's not of our culture, not of our ways, not of our beliefs, but to get back to our ceremonies, to get back to those teachings, and then to really involve the youth in these ceremonies because that's where they're going to get the most knowledge and that's where they're going to get the most healing, I feel.
I agree with you. I'm really a strong advocate for the ceremonies too, because I'll tell you, I guess if I didn't have gone through some of these things, I guess when the residential situation would have things, I would have probably flew off the handle and not been able to deal with it. But through the ceremonies, I believe that you're right, and it is our youth that needs to come forward to perform these ceremonies and get our, because that I believe the survivors are going to be the ones that are going to be the ones to look for the trust, you know, and if they see our young kids are going through the same pain as our survivors, I believe that that it's going to really help. So, yes, Nadine, I really appreciate that comment. I don't want to like put you on a spot like that, but I believe that, you know, because you are a youth and it needs to be addressed, and you're a youth model, and I believe that, you know, your voice can carry a large feather, you know, and it can speak the truth. So there you go. So
yeah.
I just want to.
No pressure.
What's that?
I said no pressure, none at all.
Oh, no pressure at all. There you go. So, you just returned from Ottawa, you were saying, and with the children's, and how was the trip? And give us some sort of an insight of what the children experienced and stuff like that.
Well, the children were invited, like I said, to perform in Ottawa for National Aboriginal Day at Rideau Hall, which is the Governor General's residence in Ottawa, for the National Aboriginal Program when the 2008 role models were being sworn in. And we worked really hard to make this trip happen. It was something, if I knew how much work and stuff would have went into it, I probably would have thought of, you know, gave it a second thought that we might not do it, but it was really worth it to really teach the kids again to, if they wanted something, that they had to work hard to get it. And it was just a once-in-a-lifetime experience for some of these children, some of these families, a lot of them being foster children that have gone through a lot of trauma in their life, dealt with a lot of issues, that would probably never, ever get an experience like this, were able to go there and perform. And really, we had a great time as a group. And they did a talent competition on Sunday because there was a whole bunch of different Aboriginal celebrations going on in Ottawa. And on Sunday, there was a big talent competition for children, and they entered into the talent competition and performed, and they actually took home $500 for audience favorite. So they were really happy about that as well. And it was,
that was really good.
Great trip to see their smiles on their faces. And they really got to bond with each other even in a more than they do in the group. And it's just really great to see that some of these kids are able to, you know, have this experience with other Aboriginal children. And just the sense of pride that they felt, or just knowing how good a job that they did, or that they worked so hard, and that, you know, I promised, you know, if they worked hard that they were going to get there, and they did. So it's just, this, you know, really that is what was so great about it, and it was really a wonderful experience.
That's good. I'm glad. That's really what our children need, to see that, you know, that you can, what you can succeed, you'll eventually will be rewarded. So that's really good to hear. So anyways, I got one more question to ask you. With all the honors bestowed upon you for your work, what more do you hope personally to achieve in the future?
What more do I hope to achieve? Well, I continue to work in my community, which I know in my heart that I will continue to do for a long time, because I really know that I found my passion, and it's working with our young little babies, it's working with our little ones, and especially with the foster children. And there's no lack of families that I'm working with in Surrey, so I know my heart is in my community and will continue to be in my community. So I will continue in my work that I do, because there's just not enough Aboriginal people working in the field of early childhood education, especially in infant development. What I'm doing, there's not enough people. So I will continue to do the work, because there isn't anybody to do the work. And I'm at school, so I continue to attend university at UBC, focusing on infant development. So I'm continuing with my education, which I think I will always be doing. I plan to continue to with my education probably forever. I am working on some new songs for a second children's album. As well, I'm looking at creating my own children's books, so board books that are geared towards infants and toddlers, not necessarily school-age books or preschool books, but really focusing on infant and toddler Aboriginal books, because there are really none out there right now in the community. I hope one day to have a family with my own children, but in the meantime, it's not there. But and as well, I think down the road, I know definitely that at some point I will foster children or adopt an Aboriginal child too. So that's something that I always have at the back of my head too. I'm working as a frontline worker right now, and it's not really in my capacity, but I know at some point I really do want to foster some Aboriginal children, because there definitely is no shortage of children out there that need a foster home, and most of the foster homes out there are non-Aboriginal homes, so we do need more Aboriginal foster homes, so I hope one day for that as well. So those are just some a few of my short-term goals, next, you know, five-year plan sort of thing.
And what's this about you having a family? Is there somebody...
No comment.
No comment. Not yet, right?
Not yet.
Oh, that's good. I did mean to. So, in other words, you're available. Is this what you did? You want to give your phone number?
I don't want to really say anything about any of that. But thanks for asking.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, you know, I'm just.
Is that diplomatic enough for you, Dale?
Yeah, that's there. You go. So. Yeah, so what else have you got planned? I mean, I know this is quite a
busy year. It's been a busy year.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, but I was talking to Claude, and you are you going to attend the new ceremony that he's coming out?
I would like to. I have plans to attend the next ceremony, but I heard it's not happening till August, and he feels that we're not ready.
Oh.
So we haven't really talked about it. We haven't really met and stuff, but I do definitely hope to attend the next ceremony in the next month. My biggest thing coming up for me is I am taking 2 weeks vacation, because I need a vacation, and I'm taking my mother to Peru.
Oh,
for an adventure. And I have a little World Vision sponsor child that I sponsor through World Vision, and he's lives outside of Lima, Peru, in a remote community. And so I'm going to be going down to Peru to visit my sponsor child at the end of July, beginning of August, and then going up to Machu Picchu and doing a big tour through Peru. So that should be quite exciting.
Yes, I agree. I congratulate you on doing that. So that's really good. Listen, I just wanted to say thanks for coming on. I know that you're a busy girl, and I would if you have anybody that that your email again. You want to just give us your email again for that CD.
It's all lowercase, Nadine_Gagne@hotmail.com, Nadine_Gagne@hotmail.com. And one other thing I forgot to say that's coming up in the near somewhat future is I have applied to the Canadian Aboriginal Music Awards. My album was produced by Jason Bernstick. He's a well-known Cree musician who's won Canadian Aboriginal Music Awards. He was nominated for Juno last year. So I have applied to the Music Awards. They don't have a children's category. They did at one point, but took it out because there wasn't enough applicants. But I have submitted my CD to other categories. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that I hopefully might get nominated in one of the categories for the Music Awards, and that will be coming. The nominations and that whole Music Award will be the end of November 2008, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Oh, there you go. That's really good, really good.
And that's all I have to say.
Oh, Dale wants to ask you a question there.
Okay.
Sorry, Nadine. I just was asking him to ask you, do you have any plans for a new CD?
Oh, yes, I was saying that. I am working on some new songs for a second album, so that will be out because a lot of people have my album, and they have children that listen to my album 100 times over and over, and they love my album, but by the 299th time, they're asking me for my second album. So I'm working on that, and that will probably be in the next couple of years, because it takes, again, lots of time, lots of money, but mostly time. So, but I am definitely working on one.
Good. We'll have to see about getting the first CD from you as well.
Yes, you do. I will mail one to you if you just want to email my mom with your address. I'll pop one in the mail for you.
Sounds good.
There you go. So.
Thank you, Dale, for inviting me on the show.
Yeah, Nadine. Now it's our time to time to close. I would like you thank you very much for being here as our guest on Métis Voices Radio program. It was a pleasure to have you with us and the opportunity to chat with you. And I wish I could, we can sometime in the future, maybe we can get together and see what's happening in your future.
Well, we're going to see each other at the ceremony.
There you go. Well, we thought the ceremony was going to be in July, and there was no way that we could have made it. But you never know if it's in late August, you never know.
Okay.
Yeah, you never know.
Okay.
You know, the spirits work in mysterious ways,
yes,
as they say.
They do. We'll all be there. We'll all be there, I think.
That's right. So.
Okay,
anyway,
well,
thank
you,
Dean. All right.
All right, miss you guys, and have a good night.
Okay.
All right, you too.
Thanks,
Dean.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I would like to also thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, our directors and sponsors of the BBS radio station, for allowing us to present this program to you each week. Please send feedback about our Métis Voices radio show, located on the BBS radio homepage, column on the left-hand side. And also be sure to visit the museum website at www.metismuseum.org and join us and join our community site at http://metismuseum.ning.com. Next week, Friday, July 18th, we will be an open show for those who wish to call in with their concerns and comments. Please tune in next week, same time, starting at 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Because I will be away at the annual Delia Gathering in Alberta held on July 24th through the 27th, for the Friday, July 23rd show, we will have an archive played. Our first show with the Honorable Senator Thelma Shalafu. For those who missed that their interview the first time, I'm sure you will enjoy listening in, and have a good week and take care. Until then, Marcy.